Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the number one ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, that's now a half a club longer, in TP5X, you'll be playing a golf ball that performs like it was built just for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks, you can personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Head to TaylorMadeGolf.com today to find the number one ball for you.
Hey, what's going on there, pal?
We saw you at the hockey game on.
Do I know you guys?
I'm Ryan Whitney. I got a drink named after me.
Not a big deal.
Pink Whitney? That's what I thought. See ya, fellas.
I invented the thing, you pigeon.
Pink Whitney for legendary moments.
On today's Part of My Take, we've got George Kittle, our good friend. Best tight end in the entire NFL.
Greg Kittle.
Where did he finish in the... We'll have to look that up before we interview him. We're taping this right now in the morning. We've done the Grit Week 24-hour stream. We're actually in the middle of the stream right now. Shout out to everyone who's watching the stream. We have those two guests, which are great. We're going to do a SpongeBob episode reading. We haven't slept in like 28 hours right now. PFT's probably a little drunk. I'm on dog 22. Got two more to go.
Beer 22 right now?
Yep. So we have all that. We have a recap of Grit Week. We have Firefest, SpongeBob reading with our good friend Nick, not KB, Nick. They get confused for each other often. And before we get to all of that, before we get to our Friday show.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, let's go. Welcome to Part of My Take, presented by the Cash App. Go download it right now. Use code Barstool. You get $10 free, $10 to ASPCA. Today is Friday, July 31st, and we are coming to you live after not having slept for 28-9-ish hours, and Grit Week 2020 24-hour live stream has been completed, so our brains are absolute garbage.
Yeah, my entire head feels like a bowl of oatmeal right now. My stomach feels like a drum and bass concert is going on. I don't feel great, but that's what Grit Week is about. It's about persevering. We're here. We're somewhat lucid.
No.
And sports are back.
Sports are back. So first, a shout out to everyone that tuned in to Grit Week 2020. We raised, like, I think the final number is going to be around $20,000 for the kids. It basically was, we created like a grade school sleepover where we never went to sleep. We played games. We played video games. PFT drank 24 beers. Billy ran a marathon in like 8 hours.
Just out of nowhere. Billy just decided he would just take care of all of it right off the top.
I ate 24 hot dogs. We had fun. We laughed. We fucked around. We got Tim Allen trending. Just randomly, we decided at 5 a.m. who's the weirdest, randomest celebrity that we could get trending so everyone will wake up and think that person died. We did that with Tim Allen. He actually just tweeted being like, what do you think it's like to wake up and think that everyone thinks you're dead?
Yeah, no, he actually thought he was dead when he woke up this morning.
So shout out Tim Allen. Way to get trending, bro. But yeah, it was awesome. The whole thing was awesome. We have not slept. It was a great time. I actually wrote down a couple notes, some highlights.
Okay, here's one highlight. When Big Cat blew a 4-star lead in Mario Party and had to run a mile, Okay. Saving me from running my second mile.
Okay.
Did you have that one too?
No, I didn't have that one. That one sucked. I had this. I wrote this down. The new Madden sucks. This is going to be the oldest I've ever sounded, but the movements, my eyes cannot understand the movements. They are all herky-jerky. I don't understand how the players move in that game. It's too hard to play.
It's because the kids grow up playing those games that have higher frame rates. We grew up playing real football games like Madden 95 when the quarterbacks didn't have names.
The ambulance and come out on the field.
There were four plays that you could run, and they all sucked. That's when football was football. Our eyes aren't used to this stuff.
It's just I
feel like I'm having a seizure when I'm
playing.
No,
I really do feel super old saying it, but when we played it, I could not understand, like, why is everyone moving so like this? These games have gotten too realistic. Give me some more glitches. Give me some weird shit. Give me it so it's hard to, like, run through someone or juke someone. It's just, I don't know. Not for me.
Yeah.
Hank thought the words superlatives was super relatives.
Yep, sure did.
I'm a phonetic reader. I'm a phonetic reader.
Frenetic.
He totally thought that. Billy's highlight was both running a marathon in the first 8 hours, but he also cooked two of the worst meals I've ever seen cooked, back-to-back, so dinner and breakfast, just incredible. I actually, so bad that I want to create a new video series where Billy is just the Washington Generals of food shows, and we just put him up against everyone in the world and watch him lose. It's that funny.
I think that if you put Billy up against a really good cook, they would probably lose because they would be so psyched out by Billy just pouring beer into whatever recipe he has, putting eggs and beans in a blender with what else was in there? Hot dogs?
Hot dogs.
An entire jalapeno packet peppers. Of hot dog seasoning.
Onions.
Even hours later, watching people walk into the office, their immediate face just gave the stank face of, like, what is going on in this office?
Yes.
Yeah. It was something that was cooked 4 hours ago on the opposite side of the building.
It looked like horse-flavored ice cream. It was bad. It looked like a cross between that and cat vomit.
Yeah. So Billy has three rules as a cook. Rule number one is they're all ingredients. That's his saying. When you say, Billy, what the fuck are you doing right now that smells and looks terrible? He says, they're all ingredients, dude. Number two is let the meat talk. So that means just don't put any seasoning on any meat. Just let it talk. And number three is every meal cooked needs beer so that Billy can drink it.
These things are true. you know, really, I was sort of in a danger zone in my brain when I was cooking because I just ran a marathon and I also had no sleep, so it wasn't my best stuff. I was sort of just like the one thing was make substance.
It was memorable though. That's all that we're looking for out of this, and it was super memorable. And then to cap it off, Billy has a flair for the dramatic. 30 seconds before the end of the stream, Billy just straight up breaks the couch.
Broke the couch.
He starts doing curls with the couch because he's so pumped, and I think two legs of the couch broke off.
Yeah, but I honestly think we've talked about the beginning of the comeback for Billy. Your performance on the Grit live stream was A+. A++.
I appreciate that.
Marathon, Top Chef, A++. What else do we have? Memories or...
It's all fuzzy.
The cat was a witch at like 5 in the morning.
Beer 15 for me.
Yeah. Jake was opening cards, pack of cards, every single hour. A Revelian task. And 1 hour, he was like, any guesses for who the first card is? And I just said Buster Posey, and it was Buster Posey.
That was wild.
I was a witch for like 30 seconds.
I thought you were Chris Angel at that point. I thought you were a street magician.
Then the six.
Liam whispered to Rudy what number. I said, Liam, think of a number and whisper to someone, and I got that right. And I was like, at this very moment in time, I am a witch on Earth.
I thought you were too for a while. It was cool, and then it fell apart. But yeah, we were getting ready to throw you into a bathtub and see if you sank. I feel like, I'll be honest, I'm drunk, I'm hungover, all at the same time. I don't know that I've ever been in that mental state before. I'm feeling like this is a 3-day come down from me.
Oh, yeah.
Probably. Yeah, this is going to be like Monday morning. I'll start to kind of edge myself out of this.
It's going to be like the best dream ever, though, waking up and being delirious.
No.
Real NBA action on.
I disagree, though, because I think I'm so delirious that I'm not going to be able to fall asleep. I think I'm too tired. I think I stayed up past it.
Oh, I'm out.
Yeah. I don't think I can nap either. I don't know what my plan's going
to
be.
I'm just too excited right now. I'm too excited that I'm done with it and that I can nap to actually sit down and fall asleep.
Mm. I probably drank enough Schrodinger's nap.
But Hank brings up a good point. There's going to be basketball. So let's predict. What's going to happen? The Pelicans and the...
Celtics, Blazers.
No. Who are they playing?
Jazz.
The Pelicans and the Jazz.
And the Clippers and the Lakers.
Is Zion healthy?
Yes, he is.
Is he quarantined?
They rushed him through the quarantine, so he's back. How crazy is it to think back to March that Rudy Gobert testing positive probably led to this bubble being created? We probably would never have bubble life.
True.
We weren't. Lou Williams would never have gotten caught eating wings at a strip club in Atlanta.
True.
If it wasn't for Rudy Gobert. The butterfly effect from that one test, the ripples would be felt for centuries.
I think the Pelicans are going to win. I think the Clippers are going to win. Lock it up.
Noted.
Does the season count?
Yes.
Not if LeBron wins.
Correct.
Good answer.
Great answer. So, yeah, we'll have basketball this weekend. That's going to be fucking awesome.
And then hockey later this weekend, too, right? Sunday?
Weekend. Yep. No, I think the Blackhawks play on Saturday, maybe.
Let's go.
Joe Kelly. That guy. That's funny. That's a funny face.
Great face. It was Philip Rivers, like, the way that he was doing. He was just, like, sticking his tongue out.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more profanity.
Yeah.
But
I
got introduced to the Joe Kelly Fight Club, and I went back and watched his tape of him fighting against the Yankees from a couple years ago. I wish just let the boys fight. And then Rob Manfred has the balls to suspend Joe Kelly for looking awesome and making dumb faces, and the Astros haven't been suspended at all.
And I saw some people trying to make the argument, like, it's egregious to Joe Kelly, like he was too close to throwing someone's head. Like, listen, no one should get beaned in the head. But if there were someone to get beaned in the head, it'd be the Astros.
And the dude also, like, during quarantine, he had a net set up in his yard, and he missed the net completely and hit his house.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Like, he has proven proven on the record that he had control issues only 2 months ago.
And that is such a litmus test of, do you take sports too seriously? If you see Joe Kelly do the pouty face to the Astros and your initial reaction is, oh, my God, how could he? No. Your reaction should be, that's fucking hilarious.
That is actually, social distancing-wise, an appropriate way to fight, just by throwing baseballs at each other.
Right.
You don't want to get too close and start punching. Someone might cough on you.
Again, don't throw baseballs at people's heads. But the Astros also have to kind of expect that bad things are going to probably happen to them for a little bit of time.
So is this Rob Manfred saying, like, if anybody hits Astros, just so you know, I'm going to suspend you 8 games?
I think it was more the headhunting, which I get. I get that portion.
It was a little high.
Yes, I get that portion of that. Like, if you're going to bean someone, you know, do it in the as Greeny would say, the tuchus region,
the hip.
So yeah, that happened. Oh, Patrick Mahomes is going to be pissed. He was number 4 on the top 100 list, and then he tweeted out a little like noted.
Oh, got it. So who's going to be ahead of him? Aaron Donald?
I don't know who was ahead of him.
Let's predict who's ahead of Patrick Mahomes.
NFL list. We have George Kittle, number 7, on the show in a minute.
Yep.
Danny
Vitale.
Wait, is this the list?
Where are we at?
Man, I'm tired.
I have no idea where
I am. Lamar Jackson, number 1. Russell Wilson, number 2. Aaron Donald, number 3. Patrick Mahomes, number 4. I'm going to agree with Patrick Mahomes here.
Yeah.
Come on.
I think Aaron Donald is the guy that you put ahead of Patrick Mahomes to remind everybody that you watch football, you watch the tape.
It's like, well, Aaron Donald's really the best player.
Yeah, which he's awesome. Don't get me wrong.
But
I don't know. And then Russell Wilson, also a very good player. But come on.
Patrick Mahomes is coming off. Like, what more does the guy need to do?
Nothing. He's our number 1.
Yeah.
We're releasing the Part of My Take 1 list. Commence debating right now. Here's the entire list. Patrick fucking Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes, number 1.
Oh, number 2, Chad Kelly.
Chad Kelly, number 2. That's okay, fair. I'll accept that. Chad Kelly, number 2.
I think that's probably bad. Kevin Durant, Trouble in Paradise, he got into a Twitter beef with God today.
Really?
Yeah. He added God. That's how you know that you're serious.
What'd he say?
I'm pulling up the tweet right now. He said, yo, @God, we good? ? So, calling out God, this league, this universe.
New last chance to you.
All right, let's get to Firefest of the Week.
Yeah, okay, oh, let me get the ad. Hold on.
Last chance to you was... No, it's fine. Just hasn't been good in a few seasons.
Yeah, the coach is like a good person this time, right?
Who knows? Season one of Last Chance to You, though, is still worth a rewatch. That shit was fire.
Dude, I am so fucked in the head right now. I like, my eyes feel swollen. You ever get that? Where your eyes feel swollen?
My whole body, like, my organs are swollen.
Can I get, I want to get popped like a sausage. I want, like, someone to poke me with a fork.
A knife and just have some of your juices.
Just give me a little pop, pop.
I don't need that. I need to be swaddled.
All right, here we go. Before we get to Firefest.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Firefest of the Week. Hank.
My Firefest of the Week is that.
My Firefest of the Week is that Billy didn't do a Firefest, and I can tell already.
No, same. Big Cat. It's disgusting. Makes me sick.
My Firefest is that.
No,
I'm
Billy, you're not up yet.
Firefested for you forgetting your Firefest.
No, it's on Big Cat now.
My Firefest of the Week is that we got Tim Allen trending, and I had never seen the tweet that he had before that said, if we evolved from apes, why are there still apes?
Checkmate.
That's some knowledge I should have had before. Like,
It's a very fine line between Tim Allen and Chris Berman.
Chris Berman noises. But, like, that's a whoa. Like, we evolved from what?
He's Chris Berman with a
truck.
Why
are they still there?
All right, Billy.
I might have fucked up my foot running a marathon on one day notice.
Yeah.
And I'm brain dead.
Yeah, okay. That's not new.
I'm a parent to myself, I'm brain dead.
What? Oh, you've realized it yourself?
No, I feel stupid now.
Also, you forgot to tell your mom that you weren't coming home last night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
That's a Jimbo,
that's a
actually.
Huge one, dude. You should have done that.
Yeah, now she was like, where are you this morning? And I was like, I'm at the office.
How do you miss telling her that?
I don't know, I just...
Said you were working late, right?
Yeah, and then, anyway, dude, I can't do this right now.
Yeah.
No, I can.
No, we're pretty much done. If Hank has a Firefest, we're pretty much done.
My Firefest is that my dog just bites everything that exists in my apartment, and I don't really know how to stop him.
Mm. Put peanut butter on stuff.
Make it a fighting dog.
Yeah. Just, turn into it.
Uh-huh.
Killer dachshund.
Yeah. What it nips?
It's got sharp teeth.
Yeah, it's a puppy.
Yeah.
You know what I used to do with Leroy?
Skin.
I used to just pretend like
anything,
every time
rugs,
he put his teeth on me.
Pillows.
I'd just be like, ow. Like I'd pretend that it
yelp,
hurt really
you
bad.
You gotta yelp like another dog.
And then they feel bad.
Yeah.
You gotta shame your dog.
Also, if they nip you nip them back.
Yeah,
yes,
bite them.
That's actually true. Alpha, you bite your dog.
And,
just a little nip.
And then
just a little nip.
Piss on them.
Mm-hmm. Don't do that, but nip them. Just give them a little nip.
If they do those territorial small peas where it's not like a spray, it's like those little like deposits, pee on top of that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
So make they
a
know.
Pee pile.
Yeah. So they know, oh shit, I can't mark my territory.
In order
here.
To fully train your dog, you're going to need at least 10 to 12 pee piles scattered around your apartment. And that's just science, dude.
You have to do tug of war with him with your teeth and beat them.
Right.
Or they won't respect you.
Right. Right. Okay.
All right.
Let's get to George Kittle. Then we got Big Show. Then we have SpongeBob SquarePants table read that we did at like 7 in the morning. I don't even know.
I was blacking in and out.
That was so fucking funny. So make sure you watch that or listen to that. Watch that. Listen to that. And then Monday we have CJ McCollum. Great recurring guest. Awesome interview. When did we do that?
That was yesterday at
2?
Yeah.
4 hours ago.
Yeah, that was yesterday.
I have no idea where I am right now.
Ago.
What was Big Show?
What time?
Big Show was 11 yesterday.
Over, who am I? 26 hours.
Yeah.
Why am I here?
That sucks.
Dude, I woke up at 6 a.m. yesterday.
But seriously, thank you everyone for tuning into Grit Week 2020. That was so much fun. We had a sleepover with no sleep.
Love you guys.
No, this is the, we're going to the ad.
Again, I have before no idea George, where I am.
Where are we?
Right. I'm on okay.
I'm strictly on autopilot right now.
Yeah, let's do the ad
we
first,
love
then
you.
We're going to go. We still got the show left.
We still love you.
We love
yeah,
you
we
still.
Do still love you, though. Before we get to our interview with our good friend George Kittle.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, here he is. George Kittle. Okay, we now welcome on. Did you just clap?
Yeah.
He's a pro. Remember, he auditioned for my job.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
We're literally walked from the 24-hour grit stream into this interview. We couldn't think of a better guest to have on to finish off Grit Week than our good friend Greg Kittle.
Mm.
Greg. It's great to see you, man.
Hey, it's great to see you guys. It's your 24-hour stream was pretty incredible. It was
thank you.
That was a wild ride.
Yes.
It was. What was your favorite part?
I don't know. You run out of buns was kind of brutal. Big Cat eating those hot dogs.
Yeah. Well, we just were like at one point I looked down on the ground and there were just buns everywhere because we just. It was basically just a sleepover, and we just started throwing shit.
The
places.
Room became a trash can,
right? So that, and then that just kind of defeated my buns. But
then
you
blew a 4-star lead. I just saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, Mario Party, dude, you don't got to bring that up. That's fucked up.
You want to talk about it?
It was crazy, honestly. I don't think if you played that game 100 times, the way the things went down, it wasn't right. It wasn't fair. And then I had to run another mile with 17 hot dogs in my belly.
I felt bad. I felt bad watching Big Cat run, but I wasn't going to stop it.
No, it sucked, man. You know what also sucked?
What?
Losing the Super Bowl. I was going to say, are you over it?
I think it's always going to suck.
That was a good segue. That was a good segue, right?
That was good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, about the same level of competition, you know, the same, you know. So, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I think it's just always going to suck, but I'm good with it at this point.
Listen, as I think I can relate. I've had loss like that, 4-star lead in Mario Party, no big deal. But honest question, we actually interviewed you that week because you're such a good friend. You came over with your entire entourage of
that was fun.
Like 17 cops that were on detail with you. I think they just basically were like, let's just make sure George doesn't start shotgunning beers at any point this week. But it does suck. We were rooting for you.
I appreciate it.
I think it is a stupid question to be like, how long does it take to get over? But I think it is also an interesting question.
Yeah.
Like how... You know, how at what point were you not thinking about it all the time, or it wasn't like, you know, because everyone who's played any sport, they replay the game immediately after, and I would imagine it's magnified to that like ultra level when it's the Super Bowl.
It really sucked like that first month and a half, 2 months after that. That was not fun. Well, I mean, think about it, like you train the whole off season, and then it's 5 months of football, and then like you lose the last game, you're like, well, that just sucks.
Right.
I mean, it's like a year of your life gone. But, I mean, like, definitely look back, you appreciate it. I mean, we won 15 games, which is pretty sick. Definitely had a fun time doing it, too. But, you know, then after that, you just kind of look forward to the new season. And, you know, now I'm just ready to play football if they let us play. And I'm excited to finally, you know, get back on the field.
Did Roger Goodell ever issue you a formal apology for that pass interference call, that bogus pass interference call in the second quarter?
Mm-hmm.
No, unfortunately, I did not get that. Unless it's in my other email, but I didn't get that.
You know, he was just making sure that the refs called that to stick it to Sean Payton because Kyle Rudolph got away with that same exact stiff arm that you had. And so he just wanted to piss Sean off a little bit more. So he was like, hey, call that same thing on Greg.
You guys remember fucking everything. That's crazy.
I actually, this just popped in my brain. I think it was you when they had that clip of Kyle on the sidelines. I think it was maybe the NFC Championship game, where he went up to the ref and he's like, "Yo, they're gonna hold George here.
Yeah,
like they can't guard him here. Watch for it." And then you got the flag. When you saw that clip, were you like, "Holy shit, that's pretty cool that he's doing that"?
No, he said that like when he installed the play on Thursday for a third down play. He goes, "Look, when they get in this form, like when we're in this formation and this guy covers you, he always holds. So just push him inside and break out. He's gonna hold you." And I was like, what? "All right, sounds good." And then
Holy shit, it happened.
Yeah. Like I said, the dude's a wizard. It's pretty fun to play for him.
That's insane.
What a guy. You guys drafted another blocking tight end this year. Are you guys just going to just smash people?
Is he going to be like bully? I'm excited. Charlie's a good dude. We were running routes together, and he was like, "Hey, this passing stuff's kind of boring. When are we going to start talking about run game?" And I was like, "You're my guy. Like, I needed that out of you."
Yeah.
We're in a lot of outside zone.
You're going to throw the ball like 9 times a game. And it's going to be awesome. But for some reason, the way that you guys play offense, the way that you guys run the ball, it almost makes it seem like it's a passing attack because it's dynamic and like it bounces outside and it's crazy. It's like it's the nuts. Plays that they draw up are fun. The blocking schemes are awesome. So when you're installing those, like how long does that take to learn these like small, intricate details of the blocking schemes?
It's actually really difficult. Like our run game meeting on Wednesdays, like when you do first and second down runs, I mean, that's like a 45 minute to an hour meeting that we install like 40 run plays. And then by the end of the week, we're at like 60 to 75, somewhere in there. And then, yeah, but each one is very different. And each week it brings like a whole new, you know, different set of like challenges. Like the week we played the Carolina Panthers was when we really installed like all of our motions and stuff in the backfield. And that was a trip because like, I know you have like a play called Hornet, you got a play called Wasp, and they both mean similar things, but they're completely different at the same time and change our rules. So it's definitely a learning process, but by the end of the year, we kind of got used to it, and that's why you could see like our run game is pretty baller in the playoffs.
How many plays do you know?
Good question.
I flush everything after every single week.
Really?
Just delete it all. Because yeah, we have a brand new install basically every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Wait, does Kyle ever, like, if you guys are, I don't know. Well, maybe it did happen with the Falcons. Were you guys, you ever see a team where you're like, nah, we don't need to do anything new? Like, they stink.
No, like, so that was, like, Kyle's playbook. And, like, it's just evolved so much since then. But, like, we still have a lot of similarities in their offense. Because we watch a lot of their tape when we play NFC South guys. Or they definitely, like I said, they do a lot of stuff that, you know, we do. But now that, you know, Kyle and we have, you know, McDaniels and LaFleur, you know, that little group, that trio, it's definitely evolved a lot. And it's really exciting.
When you throw guys off of you, like that play in New Orleans last year, are you like, I'm just such a fucking man?
It's a great question.
It really is. I like that.
You're talking to like two people who are so delirious. I love this.
No, like Big Kid, you're like leaning against this. You're asking a question with your eyes closed.
Yeah,
you're getting on the microphone.
Yeah, but you're getting the unfiltered brain. Like that's a stupid question, but it's also a smart question because I gotta think that moment is like, holy shit! Like I am a fucking beast.
Yeah, like immediately afterwards, I definitely said things like that. Probably, yeah, I said a lot of swear words and stuff like that. But like going back and watching it, you're just kind of like, that was pretty damn sick. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was.
I can't believe I did that. It's more of just like, wow, I get to go do that sometimes. And it looks a lot cooler than I think it is. But it was actually pretty fucking dope.
Yeah.
It was super fucking dope.
Yes.
What about the Seahawks? They just got Jamal Adams basically to try to stop you. So that means that you're worth, what, 2 first round picks and a third at least, right?
If my math adds up, I guess.
Yeah. Have you watched any tape on him?
Of course. Yeah, when he was on the Jets, we were going to play him this year. So I definitely watched Jamal Adams. He's a hell of a player. So I'm just excited. Like the NFC West that's some competition out there. Like from the Cardinals to the Rams and now the Seahawks definitely are, and us. Like it's going to be a really fun conference to play in. And yeah, Jamal Adams just is going to make a lot more fun for us.
Wait, holy shit. I didn't realize this because we were doing the 24-hour stream, but you made history. You, in the NFL top 100 that they have done for a decade now, you were ranked number 7 overall. That's the top tight end ever since they've been doing it for the last decade.
That's pretty wild.
That's, did you not, you knew that. Like, you're, you, someone texted you and was like, holy shit, man, this is pretty crazy.
I was actually pumped. Ian Rappaport texted me on Wednesday and said, hey, low key, but this is what you got ranked. And I said, dude, I just got my own personal scoop from Ian Rappaport. That was sick.
Yes.
Yeah. How about that?
You should have replied, though, and been like, I already, like, the PMT guys already told me.
Yeah, Leroy told me 3 days ago.
Hank already told me 2 days ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah, don't let him have that satisfaction, because what he's doing is he's trying to get one over on you. He's right. Like, I know something that you don't know, so here it is.
You're right.
You got to just go back and be like, yeah, they told me that so long ago, man. That's like, I can't believe you're that late.
I'm learning from you guys. I like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
yes.
Got to be coachable. Okay, I'll take that. I'll be best.
Yeah. Have you thought about asking Kyle Shanahan, like, maybe hand me the ball sometimes and just let me run with it?
Well, he does hand me the ball sometimes.
Yes.
Okay, so that's a yes.
Sounds like PFT's a head coach. A
student of the game.
Yeah.
Have you asked Kyle Shanahan, hey, can I get the ball more and let me run with it? Just put it in my hands.
No, I usually ask him just to run the ball more because that's what we're best at.
You just want to finish people.
I like blocking people. It's really fun. Moving a man from point A to point B against his will is pretty satisfying.
I mean, that's true grit. So wait, do you have a definition for grit?
Huh? Do I have my own definition for grit?
Yeah, or is it, I'd have to imagine grit has come up once or twice when your dad writes fucking Moby Dick to you every Sunday morning.
That it has multiple times. let's see. Grit to me is taking pleasure in doing all the things that no one else wants to fucking do.
Yes. Mm,
yeah.
Great.
Being
quote.
Comfortable being uncomfortable.
Great. Ooh, quote.
Look at you. Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Got to credit Danny Woodhead for that.
He told us that a few
hours ago. We learned that 2 hours ago.
No, so. Danny Woodhead didn't give that to you. Every coach, I've learned that from every coach since, like, my fifth grade football coach, which was my dad. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did he write to you before the Super Bowl?
The Super Bowl? Let's see. It was a 14-pager, so that was a lot.
Whoa.
That was the most I've read in a while.
I'm giving you credit for a book.
Thank you.
Yes,
I appreciate
yes.
that. And it's cool, too. There's pictures in it, too, so it's kind of a picture book, too.
Nice.
He did
nice.
Drawings, or did he just, like, print out pictures?
No, so, like, my dad, he uses, like, photos of things that, like, just from our relationship. So, like, when I was a kid, he used to read me Lord of the Rings, like, as a bedtime story. And so, like, he uses Lord of the Rings photos, Matrix photos, Star Wars. I don't know. He just kind of goes off everything from my childhood. Just kind of makes me feel like it's still a kid's game. Like, that's the best point of the letters, I guess. Just remember, you know, it's never too big. That was
one
of the Super Bowl letter. It was pretty fun.
Wait, so what was one of the better things in that letter?
In that letter? Oh, my goodness. Like I said, I usually flush stuff after every game. But usually it's he does a great job of – there's usually like a paragraph right in the middle that he just drops about 12 F-bombs and tells everybody to go F themselves. And that's usually inspires me. It just kind of locks me in, and I'm just like, you know, like, screw that guy, screw that guy, screw that guy's fan, screw that guy. And it's just – I really enjoy those things.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I like how he starts it off. He's like, hey, these are some things that are very important to me about our relationship.
Yep.
But after just like five paragraphs, he's like, fuck everybody up. You're a fucking man. Fuck up. You're fucking Kittle.
Yeah.
Put your face through the turf.
And then he always comes back and it like mellows out at the end too, saying, you know, I'm proud of you. I love you. Just go out and play football. And I was like, that middle paragraph is always the one that just gets me fired up.
Oh, I love it.
Dude, I got a tweet for you. I searched your name on Twitter. Coach Yak, who I think is a coach. He's social video content for a 49ers.
Mm.
Wait, no, does he work for the 49ers?
I've seen Coach Yak on Twitter. He's a nice guy.
Okay, yeah.
He says nice
this
things.
This is a great tweet. You just nailed everything in this one. Starts with, not sure who needs to hear this. I love when tweets start like that. It's like,
that's
dude,
a good
you're tweeting
one.
It. Like, you're tweeting it. So you want everyone to hear it. But and they said, but George Kittle deserves this moment. He's talking about the top 10 player.
Got it.
He's not only a top 10 player in the NFL, but he's a really good person.
Oh.
I'm going to throw a flag on this. Coach Yak, dude, why can't you say he's not only a top 10 player in the NFL, but a top 10 guy
Ooh.
Ever? Yeah. Give you top 10 status ever.
I like that. Yeah. Like I said, you guys are great coaches. We just got to – he's got to improve. It's all right.
Yes.
His next tweet will be better. I know it will be.
I'm going to start doing that. Not sure who needs to hear this. Well, you're tweeting it.
Yeah, starting a tweet with an open letter.
I don't know who needs, to hear this, but wear a mask.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one.
Would you consider yourself to be an even better guy off the field?
Ooh, I try to be. I think that's why I have success on the field, because I try to be as nice as I can off the field. And then, you know, good, I'm a big karma guy. Like, I believe in, you know, everything they do off the field definitely correlates on the field. So I think, I think I'm a nice guy.
Yeah, that was a hard-hitting journalism question.
I think
on
you're
my part.
A really nice guy. I think you're cool and nice.
PFT, you're on a roll right now, man.
I'm nailing it. I'm out though. I literally have no more questions. Here's a good question. How soon into training camp are you going to wait to bust out the Canadian impression?
Probably the opening. Like, as soon as I walk in and they have a camera on me, it'll be, "Oh, hey there."
Yeah.
Oh, hey, like how you doing, eh? I just can't help myself. It's too much fun.
It's the best. It feels so good to say it. I have another question that popped in my head. Are you going, without fans in the stands, are you going to struggle with, like, the adrenaline and the getting pumped up and ready to go?
I think it'll be a challenge for everybody, but no. I mean, like, I just love football the way it is. Like, I love practicing every single day, and the fact that now I get to go actually hit people and, you know, try to bury people. It doesn't matter if there's not anybody there, because it's just going to be fun to do it in front of my teammates. I just take satisfaction in it.
Do they get pissed off at you in training camp? Are they like, "Hey, Greg, maybe take it easy on a couple of these reps"?
No, I totally take, like, I go hard in training camp, but I don't pancake people in training camp. I don't want to hurt, like, it's not good for team, you know, team chemistry. It's bad vibes. Yeah.
Oh, no, this is my drink body armor question.
Ooh.
Drinkbodyarmor.com.
Billy's actually asking you this question on a microphone on top of a pallet of body armor.
So yes, sponsor for Grit Week. So my question is, Billy, do you have any questions for...
Billy, did you just say Mr. Kittle?
Yeah.
Did. It's Greg. Just figure that out.
Yeah. You. Come on, dude.
Oh, sorry. I was just wondering what your favorite Moby Dick quote was.
No, his dad doesn't actually... It was talking about how long the his dad writes him a lot.
Anyway, I think I have a Moby Dick quote that I think... They don't give me headphones, so I don't know what they're talking about. But anyway, I think you'd really like this one because it sort of ties into your Joker tattoo.
I love it.
There is no folly of the beasts of the earth which is not infinitely outdone by the madness of men.
Ooh.
Billy, tweet that at me. I love it.
I'm going to tweet that at you.
It's like, man is the most dangerous animal.
Exactly. So when you're trying to get hyped up and there's no crowd, I think that might help.
I'm going to headbutt a wall too, but I like that, Bill.
That's my only question. Thank you so much.
No, you had more questions.
Billy, give me another question, man.
Okay.
The Joker tattoo.
Can you tell the story behind your Joker tattoo?
My Joker tattoo? Cool. Oh, dear. Yes, of course I can. So the Joker tattoo, I don't know. So for me, football, I think, is like 10% your physical abilities, because everyone in the NFL is like an all-American football player. They're all the best high school football player, best player on their team. And so what can elevate you to the next level is, you know, I think 90% of the game is played above your shoulders, just in your head. So like the mental side of it. And so I'm big into alter egos. And so, yeah, I'm big into that. I don't know, like Bo Jackson said he played, like every time he played football, it wasn't him playing, it was Jason for like the scary movies. And so, like, that was his alter ego. And so I was thinking about an alter ego for me, and something I always loved is the Heath Ledger Joker. And so part of it's just kind of like the chaos of it, and it's something that I channel as an alter ego while I play football. And that's kind of why
That's honestly, like, so sick, because, like, you go, like, psycho mode. You do psycho shit on the field, and I can totally see how you just, like, get into that zone. And, like, there's that one video of you just blocking a guy, like, outside the back of the end zone. I think it's like, and you're just laughing the whole time, and that's like super awesome. And like, I try to go psycho mode sometimes, but I don't have as many outlets anymore.
Yeah.
But
that's
so
right.
We kind of went psycho mode like the past 24 hours, like staying up. So
you're in a hell of a marathon.
That there's
man.
Other psychos. Yeah, I went psycho mode.
Yeah,
that wasn't me on that. That wasn't me on that treadmill.
What are some ways that you can recommend to Billy to go psycho mode in his everyday life?
Well, I use, like, in the off season, I lift weights, and that's like, I work out really hard. Like, that's part of what I do. Work out. Maybe, you know, come back, and even though Big Cat's up by 4 stars, you still beat him. Something like that.
Yeah. That was big comeback. Dude.
I call my psycho mode berserker mode.
No, that's fair. You brought up the Super Bowl. I think
you
that's
like
fair.
Berserker mode?
Yeah, wait, Big Hit, you brought up the Super Bowl, so I got free shots at you.
Yeah, a few people watched the Super Bowl, dude.
Prove it.
I bet on you guys.
I couldn't. I would have, though.
Yeah. I know you can't, but I did, and I was feeling real good in the third quarter and feeling real smart, and I was doing the whole it's hard-nosed football, and, like, they're just built different, and the 49ers will smash you.
So it's your fault? Is that what you're saying?
No, I did help the Chiefs big time. Every time the Chiefs were down, I said, thanks for coming out, Chiefs.
Yeah, I know. I saw those. I saw those. I was like, you dirty dog.
Yeah. So I guess it was my fault. God damn it.
Have you watched the replay of the Super Bowl on TV?
On TV? No.
Yeah.
I have not.
So you haven't seen, like, Shakira and J-Lo at halftime?
Yeah, how was that?
Mike Wilbon had a stroke because he got so horny.
Lordy.
That was Lordy Gate.
Yeah. Huh.
And then, actually, this is probably something that you don't see on the game film, but we notice as fans, at the end of the second half, when the Chiefs were about to punt, John Lynch was standing up in the booth trying to call a timeout from the booth. Did you ever see that clip?
Yeah, I think I have seen that clip. Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
We were all like screaming at the TV, like, call a timeout.
Yeah, football guy right there.
Were you wondering, like, why don't we get an extra 40 seconds? Like, let's call this timeout. Let's go down the field.
Didn't we get a timeout after that?
You might have gotten one, but I think 50 seconds ticked off.
Honestly, like I said, I flush everything, especially like that one. I don't really remember much of the details. It's pretty fun. But I do go back and watch it. But I will say, John Lynch calling a timeout from the booth is pretty spectacular.
How do you flush things? I want to learn how to do that.
I don't know. Like, I just literally don't remember much of the details about it. And it's just like intentional, though. It's just like, I don't really feel like remembering that anymore.
Alter ego.
Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, I fucking love it, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where'd you find Billy?
I don't know.
He showed up.
He showed us his game film.
He showed up.
In his interview.
He showed up in an interview for intern.
I looked up his resume the other day, and he said he's very experienced with Photoshop.
Oh, my God. He had, like, five pages. George, he had five pages stapled, and, like, I'd say 80% of his resume was made up. And we were like, when we interviewed him, we're like, dude, this is made up. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Well, like okay, that. Fine. Yeah, like, all right.
That's awesome.
I don't like that.
Fake until you make it.
Yeah. Right.
I think he included a hyperlink to his high school highlight tape, but it was on printed out paper. So, like, you can't click on a piece of paper and watch the link.
Right. So, he was something else.
I was to put my 40 time in my Spark rating.
What was your 40 time?
I ran a 4.89.
Ugh.
Oh, here's a good question for you.
4.89?
Hand time. I mean, I only went 2.3.
I asked Big Cat this the other day. Do you think that players get faster after they run the combine when they're coming out of college? Like, if you took a really speedy guy that ran like a 4.3 or 4.4, after 2 or 3 years in the NFL, do you think he'd run faster or slower?
I know for a fact I'd run a faster time right now, for sure. Not even close. I think most – I mean, like, unless, like, you know, like John Ross ran, what, like a 4.05 or something, 4.1 something? I don't know how much faster he can get. 4.17. I don't know how much faster he can get. But, like, I think a lot of guys – I mean, like, I hit puberty, like, age 23, I swear. And so, like, I could definitely run faster now.
Yeah. I said that guys in the NFL run faster a couple years in because they know what to do with their body, and it's a job now. So it's not like, you know, you can't go to the gym at certain times or, you know, you have classes. It's a full-time job. In the offseason, you are paying someone to help train you and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot. I like the NFL a lot better. The freedom and then being able to do whatever I want to do is much more fun. And actually, I'm a lot more responsible now. Like, I don't just go get really drunk, you know, 2 to 3 nights a week.
Yes.
Which I wish I could,
we're working on that.
Yeah. All right. I have one last question for you. Mm. It actually wasn't a question. I just wanted to say thank you because you were one of the day one ride or die Coach Doug's guys.
Oh, dude. Didn't I tell you? I said, dude, you got to start streaming this stuff. I was in love with it.
Yes. And you would always text me and be like, when I was panicking, because I panic like a bitch all the time, you'd be like, dude, just stick to the plan. You got this. Like, half the time you'd be wrong, and I would just panic and shit down my pants. But I always appreciated that. I'd like, I'd like throw a crippling late interception, and I'd look at my text message after the game and be like, "You got this, man. You're going to win this game." I'm like, "Nope, but I know George got my back."
Always, man. Ride or die. You kidding me? Dougs?
Love it. Love it. Love it.
Going back to Toledo was definitely one of my favorite moves that you pulled.
Had to. We're going to get the key to the city. We're going to get the key to the city, and PFT's going to try to walk on. He's got eligibility left.
I think I do, yeah. I don't want to go back to college, but, you know, a big-time program like Toledo, the Dougs built from the ground up, I feel like they just let me.
Yes.
You should take a journalism class.
Ooh. That's not bad. Yeah, not a bad idea. Get a big J.
That is good.
Like, you could show off a little bit in there. Like, yeah, like, I'm a big J, but, like, hey, you're always trying to get better, right?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think I'd fail out of journalism school pretty quickly. I mean, you've seen my dog's Twitter account.
Yeah.
I don't exactly have high standards.
I think journalism is evolving, especially into what you guys do every single day.
Yeah.
So maybe you could teach. You should teach a class. There you go.
Can I kick on the team if I'm a professor? That'd be cool. That sounds like a Disney script right there.
Disney, yeah. Wow. You had a Disney movie right in front of you guys.
I like that. I like
that. We're on it.
Well, George, thank you so much for joining us, man. Best way to end Grit Week. Appreciate it. Hopefully we see you soon. Good luck this year, and we love you.
I love you guys, too. I'm just waiting for my reoccurring guest shirt. I'm going to blame Hank for that.
On its way.
It's in the mail.
It's on its way, I promise you.
You moved, though. You moved recently, right?
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, it's a pandemic. Hank's right. It's a pandemic, dude.
The mail is very slow right now.
Still haven't sent me those coffee chews either, Big Cat. Just waiting on those.
It's a pandemic. Listen,
people can't get tests. They're not going to be able to get a T-shirt from a second-rate podcast.
It's a pandemic.
Second-rate podcast. I like that. No, you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we love you, man. Thank you so much.
Fellas, thanks for having me on.
That interview with George Kittle was brought to you by our good friends over at ButcherBox. When it comes to meat, quality matters. We like to let the meat talk around here. If you want to use high-quality meat that will speak volumes, use ButcherBox. There are hidden costs that are associated with low-quality meat. You get off-flavor meat. There's a big cost to the environment, etc., etc. High-quality, humane-raised meat is important, and ButcherBox will deliver it directly to your door. Not everyone has access to convenient, high-quality meat. ButcherBox has 100% grass-fed, finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, and wild-caught salmon. Stuff that you can't get at the grocery store, and it's cheaper than you might think. Every month, ButcherBox ships a curated selection of high-quality meat right to my home. All the meat is free of antibiotics. It's got no added hormones, and each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat. That's a lot of meat. That is a shitload of meat. It's enough for 24 individual meals. It's packed fresh, shipped frozen. It's vacuum-sealed, so it stays that way. High protein. You're going keto? Use ButcherBox. You're going low-carb? Use ButcherBox. You're looking for gains? Use ButcherBox. Big Cat.
A good friend of mine once said, let the meat talk.
Yeah, that's what we do around here.
Yeah.
And when it's ButcherBox, it's not just talking. That meat sings to you.
It does.
It arrives at my door like a singing telegram saying, eat me. And I do. With ButcherBox, you get the highest quality meat around for just about $6 a meal. And they have free shipping nationwide except Alaska and Hawaii. So mark a visit off your meat counter and receive quality meats delivered to your door right now. Just go to butcherbox.com/take. That's butcherbox.com/take. You know who I bet eats a lot of meat? The Big Show. And he's up next.
And now for something completely different.
Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. Maybe the biggest guest we've ever had.
Yeah.
Well, we've had Kane.
We had The Undertaker.
The Undertaker. We've had Dwight Howard. But I think you might be the biggest. It is The Big Show. Paul White, he has a new show out called The Big Show Show on Netflix. You got to watch it. Big Show. Do we go by Paul or do we go by Big Show?
I answered all kinds of adjectives. Show, Big Show, Jackass, like show. Whatever.
Jackass.
It's called Show.
Okay. Yeah. The show.
Show works. Everybody calls me Show, so that works.
Yeah. So it's great to have you on. I've been a big fan of yours for a very long time. Let's talk about the Netflix show first.
Thank you.
So it's obviously your family and raising three daughters. And I love it because I would assume raising three daughters is more difficult than wrestling for like 20 plus years in the WWE. Is that correct?
I think they both have their own unique challenges. This partnership that we did with Netflix has been an incredible journey. Wanting to do family comedy in front of a live audience has been a goal of mine for a long time. It was a heck of a learning curve at first, understanding how to hit the timing on the jokes and understand the writing. And I thought our writers did a great job of melding what it's like to be a WWE superstar and then try to also reintegrate yourself back into the family when you're off the road. So It's been really good. We got another episode dropping August 10th. It's a cross promotion one with some other shows, and it's called Game On. So it's kind of a little bit of a Olympic take. This year, we think we're going to do pretty good because we've got Lola, who is our ringer athlete. So hopefully things will turn out well for us.
All right. So what did you take from the wrestling world, from dealing with a guy like, I don't know, hypothetically, The Miz, and now you use that in how to raise small children?
Well, it's funny. If you hear something, that's my bird.
You have
a
bird? What kind of bird?
Yeah, he's an Amazon, but I have another word for it. Starts with an A and ends with an E. But anyway,
okay.
Amaze.
Yeah. Amazon.
Yeah, he's an Amazon, but he's also he's got. Yeah, exactly. I think what I take from it is you can't overparent that much as a WWE superstar because you're not around. I mean, the family is going to have lives. They're going to have their own schedules. They're going to do their own things. And then you reintegrate yourself. And it's a fine line to do that without being overbearing. But I've never been the rough, angry dad. That's never been my thing. I'm always a sit down and talk to me kind of guy. Okay, what were you thinking? Okay, what made you think that was okay? Mm-hmm. Do you understand what you did was not okay? Well, do we need to talk about this? Or are we going to move forward? We're moving forward. Okay. So I don't have to worry about this again. Okay. You're not going to paint the cats, you know, with nail polish. Okay. Good. Okay.
Wait,
we'll move on.
Painting the cats, you know? Or painting the cat's nails?
Oh, the cat itself. It was a nightmare. She was little when it happened. So
I was going to say painting a cat's toenails. That's
She wanted to give the cat a leopard look. And It was just, you know, pink nail polish all over the cat. It looked like, you know, the cat was mugged in a bad part of town.
So I want to get into your wrestling career, but before I do that, how pumped are you with the way Wichita State basketball has played in the last like decade that you get a little residual bump from that? Because Wichita State is one of those
a little rub from the Shockers.
Yeah, like yeah, if you
it's
if you
funny
say,
because
yeah, yeah.
Here's the thing. When I went to Wichita State, yeah, we didn't have that great a season, but, you know, Coach Cohen got fired halfway through the season. They let him stay on and coach, which made it a really awkward environment for him and for us as talent. I remember that team that we had at Wichita State was probably one of the most athletic teams around. We had 7 or 8 guys with 40-plus vertical leaps. Claudius Johnson, John Smith, Robert George, Winston Peterson. I mean, these guys could just – incredible athletes, but we were also young. Wichita State was a dominant force back when they had Xavier McDaniel and Cliff Livingston and Antoine Carr, you know, but, you know, they had so many violations they couldn't go to tournament.
Right.
You know what I mean? To now to see a town like Wichita that really supports Wichita State, the community supports the team, that Henry 11 Arena, even when we were terrible, there wasn't an available seat. You know, I think it seated almost 11,000 back then. And it was full and it was exciting and people are passionate about it. So to see the team finally start firing on cylinders, it's a really great boon for the town. And yeah, it's a nice little feather in my cap now when people say, oh, you went to Wichita State, and they like get excited about it. You know?
Yeah,
so
it's a
yes,
big
I
deal.
Appreciate the rub.
Wait, so hold on. I got to go back. Your coach was fired halfway through the season but allowed to stay on?
Yeah.
That's awkward.
Yeah, it was really awkward. It was so awkward. I mean, you know, it's funny. Coach Cohen's the one that recruited me out of high school, and he's the guy I wanted to play for. And it was just a real weird dynamic where they let him go. Basically, you're done. And they started recruiting for other coaches halfway through the season, but they let him finish out his term. Rather than making that announcement at the end of the season, They made it like halfway through. I think we were like 7 or 8 games in, and they made that decision.
That's so sad. I feel so bad for him.
For us as teammates, because it's really hard. It's not like you build a relationship with a coach. This guy recruited you. You understand his program. You believe in what he's going to do with you as a talent. And then he's replaced, and it breaks everything up. I mean, some of the guys went on to different things. I don't think our team – I don't think Wichita did much after that. They brought in Scott Thompson from Rice, which I understand he's supposed to be a really great guy, but he wasn't somebody that I wanted to play for. He wasn't the guy that recruited me. But, you know, things work out, you know. I got a second opportunity and got a chance to go into professional wrestling, so I think it all worked out.
Yeah, so
I was a good free throw shooter, though.
There you go.
Yeah.
I might have had a 2-inch vertical leap, but I was a good free throw shooter.
Could you still dunk?
Can I still dunk now? Yeah, I can dunk now. It's not the going up that worries me. It's the coming down.
Right. That's the hard part.
Yes.
That's like me drinking. It's like, I can drink, but I don't want to get hungover.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. It's like, I mean, I'll shoot around every now and then, play a game of horse. But I've got no desire to try to dunk. You know,
yeah.
To me, it just seems like the risk reward factor is just not worth it. I'm good.
Right. So before you got into wrestling, I read that you were a bounty hunter. And I have to imagine that you were the most intimidating bounty hunter of all time. It's like we talked.
I don't think it's that glorious like we've seen on TV with like Lorenzo Lamas or somebody like that. I'm not that kind of a. I wasn't that. I was a, worked for a Bales Bondsman in Wichita for a couple of things, and I was a nice guy. So you can be cool and ride in the car. You can be a dick and ride in the trunk. It's your choice.
So, did you ever actually put somebody in the trunk of a car?
I have. Yeah,
that's badass.
That's awesome.
It's not that rewarding of a job, believe me. You understand? Like when I was doing it, I was working with someone, you know, I was doing that for like $50.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it was this incredible, you know, it was like $50. You can do it once in a while, pick somebody up, wait for some. And most people are cool when they have stuff like that. Like the whole running people down and all, I didn't experience any of that. Just showed up, hey, you got to come in, fill out the paperwork. This is what you got to do, you know. Most people really didn't realize that they had screwed up. I mean, you know, they just had other things going on and they weren't trying to be bad. It just, you know, things happen.
Yeah. You know? Also, if the show is knocking on your door, I don't think I would run from you. I think I would be like, you know what, you got me.
Well, you can understand. Back then, I looked like Lurch from the Addams Family. I was like 7 foot tall and like 315 pounds, this real long, narrow head and these giant hands. I probably looked like a. I don't think I was that intimidating back then. I looked like some kind of alien, probably a transplanted alien from outer space or something.
So
that my big mullet. Yeah. I think my mullet was my most intimidating factor.
Well, I mean, you keep saying that you weren't intimidating, but you just keep on describing more and more intimidating things.
Right. Huge hands.
Big hands.
7'1", 315.
Mullet.
Not that intimidating.
Mullet that dragged down to the ground.
Yeah.
Sister Christian blasting from my IROC Camaro.
I don't think of that because I grew up with it. I mean, I was 6'2 at 12. So right. I've never been one to realize sometimes just how freakishly big I think I was. You know,
yeah.
I can remember being on the playground as kids and like, you know, parents would come get their kids and make them leave the playground because who was this 20-year-old weird looking adult like of mice and men out there on the playground? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell them. I'm 12. I'm shaving, but I'm really 12.
As a 12-year-old, that's got to be kind of awkward, too. Like, you have to deal with that. You know, you have to deal with other parents kind of, like, telling their kids it's not okay to be around you. And you're like, I'm just trying to be a kid here. How did that affect you growing up?
It was rough for a long time. I think it made me a little bit introverted. It made me more of a reader, more of a person that appreciated friendships. I mean, and when I got in high school and was a good athlete and stuff, but I still hung around kids that played Dungeons & Dragons, you know, I had friends in all different classes. I wasn't just a jock. I did a little bit of everything. So I think it prepared me to learn to appreciate friendships and how to make friendships and be open. And I developed a sense of humor with it too, because that's one thing that I've always tried to do is have a sense of humor and make people comfortable in my presence.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, usually after a while you've been around me, the size and all that stuff goes away. You just realize I'm a big goofball. So it wears off.
So in your wrestling career, you turned heel and then turned back, I think more than any
I've had
wrestler.
I've more turns than NASCAR, buddy.
Yeah, any wrestler ever. Was there ever a moment, which is actually a testament that you can play both and you can go back and forth. Was there ever a moment, though, where you forgot whether you were supposed to be the bad guy or the good guy and like screwed up for a second.
Yeah. Multiple nights I had to look across the before I went to Gorilla and look at Vince McMahon. Am I smiling or frowning? Because I don't know. It's like my character had schizophrenia and I had these nervous breakdowns of multiple personalities. And sometimes I would turn three times in a show.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was unreal. But, you know, I'm proud of the fact that whatever we needed me to do for my character, I was able to pull off. If I needed him to hate me, like in London, and get him to chant, "You fat wanker," and then come back a year later and have him chant, "You still got it." So I think that's a pretty good testament.
Which did you like more?
I like being a heel more. I think it's easier for me. I can tell that visual story of we've all understand that it's in our DNA and our genetics. We understand overcoming larger predators and, you know, David versus Goliath, all the stories that we've heard. So when I have that much size, it can influence that pressure and then turn around and make that David. Like some of the matches I had with Rey Mysterio where you would look at Rey and I and you think there was just no way. But then to tell that story in the ring, and then when Rey starts to make a comeback, it's a 619, a West Coast pop, and then the reaction from the crowd is just – it's overwhelming. When you do your job right as a bad guy in sports entertainment, as a heel, when your shoulders are getting pinned 1, 2, 3, and it's so loud, the crowd, every person in the arena is counting with the 1, 2, 3, that's just as incredible feeling as getting the cover.
I like that about you.
It's never bothered me either way to put guys over. That's never been an issue for me.
I saw an interview with you where you were saying, you know what, I didn't have the best record in the history of WWE. I don't have the most titles.
No.
But you've made a lot of memories. You've made, like, you take pride right. in the art of losing sometimes because you recognize that yes. it's a part of the greater show going on around you, and you're playing your role. That's like the grittiest thing ever for a wrestler.
No, that's the only way you can look at it. If you start trying to keep track of win-loss records, and I think that's when ego comes into play and causes a lot of bad experiences for a lot of talent. Yeah, you're going to do well in the beginning because they're trying to establish you. They're trying to build you as a talent. And then if you want to have a 20-year career or 25-year career, there are very few John Cena, Stone Cold Steve Austin's, The Rock's. There's very few of those guys that are going to be put at that top position where talent is going to be made basically to be fed to them because they're the ones that are carrying the wagon. You have to know your role and where you come into play. And to get enjoyment out of your career, you have to understand what role you play. And, you know, Rock used to have the promo all the time, know your role. Well, yeah, it can be taken as a dig, but it's also a good lesson to learn as a talent because you never know when opportunity is going to be given to you and you have to be ready for that opportunity. And you have to know that whoever's in charge, booking or creative writing, they know that they can count on you to deliver. You know, I mean, I think for one time, I think I had an 0-7 or 0-8 WrestleMania record. I want to do a reverse Undertaker record.
Yes.
And somebody found out about it and I won a match and screwed my record up. So, but I take a lot of pride in working with talent that goes on to have long, successful careers. You know, I'm very proud of working with John Cena. I'm very proud of working with Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. There's a lot of guys that I've got to work with over the years and help them along their journey, you know, and I'm still here, so I must be doing something right.
Yep. So we're going to, I love that answer, and we're going to run this on Friday during our Grit Week. So we do this every year. What guy that you've been around is the toughest guy in terms of you've seen him injured and you could not believe that he went out there and performed and you're like, this guy has supernatural grit and toughness? What's the one guy that comes to mind when I ask that?
There's three guys that come to mind.
Okay.
One is Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
Two is Kane. And the other one is John Cena. I've seen John Cena wrestle with a torn cornea. I've seen him. He had neck surgery in Pittsburgh at 11 a.m. At 5 p.m., he came by the arena to say hi to everyone and wish us a good night on Raw.
Jeez.
You know what I mean? Like, I've seen...
I did a podcast
John
after foot surgery.
It's another level that guys like that set the bar to. You know, I've seen Kane, you know, have a completely blowed out SI joint in a match, you know, to numbness in his leg and extreme pain. And I've seen Kane pull it together to finish the match. You know, Undertaker, we all know, I've seen Undertaker just do It's ridiculous how that guy goes through pain. I've seen him wrestle with 103 fever and get an IV bag as soon as he got back through the curtain, you know, where the guy had some kind of stomach flu and running a fever, but he still went out and put the match on. That kind of internal gut is inspiring. Believe me, those of us that get it, you don't talk about your pain. You don't whine about it because it doesn't matter. You go out there and you get the job done. If you're on the card and the fans pay to see you, then you show up. If you're breathing, you can get it done. You can find a way. I had to wrestle Edge and Taker in Washington for a pay-per-view, and I had a bone fragment locked in my knee. So my knee either was bent or it was straight. And I was going to get surgery the next day, and I was talking to Taker about it. I said, I don't know. Do I wrestle? He says, are you going to see the doctor tomorrow? I said, yeah. He says, lock it up and go. I said, we'll work around it. So I had to put a straight leg brace on where I couldn't bend my leg. And this giant knee brace on that locked my knee in a position where I could move it, and went out there and did the triple threat with Edge and Taker and got through the match.
Fuck.
You know, but I'm proud of myself that I got through it because I didn't let Edge down, I didn't let Taker down, I didn't let the fans down.
Do you?
So, I mean, it's not like you deserve a medal for it,
right?
But that's kind of your job, is to, you know, that's why we work so hard to always put on a show for our fans. We know the responsibility that we carry, and if we can, we will.
Do you remember, it must have been WrestleMania 2014, because I searched my Twitter of mentions of the Big Show, and I wrote, seriously, people who say wrestling is fake aren't watching a dead Big Show right now. And then I said, although joke's on me, because I'm pretty sure I just watched the Big Show die. What was that? Did you die?
On what?
I don't know. It was January 26, 2014. Maybe WrestleMania 2014? Did you die?
I don't know. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, you know, I'm still here.
I don't know, though. I don't know if you're still here.
I don't. There's all kinds of rumors. There's rumors that I got the biggest one, that I was shot and killed.
Yes.
I think it was The Onion.
I remember that.
That I was shot and killed because a fan got inside of a cage match and I went crazy like a wild bear. So that's kind of funny. That kind of stuff makes me laugh.
Yeah.
That's extremely funny. And I appreciate the nod from The Onion for bringing up my name and making it relevant. But
yes.
No, I haven't died. I mean, a lot of people think my career has died a lot over the years, but I still keep coming around. So
no, you're still like around.
Big Show, not dead.
Have you thought about coming back as the Big Nasty? Because that was a great nickname, the original one.
Oh, the Big Nasty Bastard. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was actually a pretty cool shirt, but our business model has shifted from those days. So is mine. I'm a TV dad now. I could be the big nice dad. There you go. The big nice dad.
You had one of the all-time entrances when you came out. I think it was your first time in WWE. You were hiding underneath the ring in the steel cage, right?
And Valentine's Day Massacre, yeah.
Vince had you cut through the bottom of the ring and you just emerged out of it. And like every wrestling fan from that point on was always like, is there somebody hiding under the ring this time? It was like how you read one story in the paper about like a snake found in a toilet, and now you just check your toilet every single time.
Spiders and grapes.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone thought that there was always maybe a wrestler or maybe you underneath the ring the whole time. But I guess what I'm getting at is it had to be an easier entrance for you because, you know, your first time in WWE, you don't have to take your time going down the ramp. You don't have to get nervous looking at the crowd. You just pop up and immediately you just throw Stone Cold into a chain link fence, right? That must have been pretty easy to do.
No, actually, it was nerve wracking as hell because I had never, when I think about WWE, I think about the line in G.I. Jane where they talk about, you know, you're going to learn to operate at a tempo. You know, when he's giving that speech about their operational tempo and how hard they're going to work and how fast things are going to come at you. That line, that movie always makes me think about our company and what we do. Because things change on a dime with us. I've seen entire shows change at 7:45, and we go on the air. Back in the day, we go live on the air at 9. I see the entire show change, you know, 45 minutes, an hour before the show starts. So the idea of coming through the ring and the creativity that WWE always puts out to try to find a different way to do things was unreal. I remember it was loud under the ring because I was loaded one or two matches before. So when you're under the ring, the ring's moving, so it's loud in your ear. And you've got to pay attention for your cue and know what's going on and the adrenaline. But it's not like you can be in the back and do jumping jacks or toe touches or something to stretch and warm up, I'm huddled under there. So your muscles are cramping, your legs are cramping. It's not comfortable. It's not like there's a lounge chair and a – not like Hornswoggle's under the ring where he had like a nice little lounge set up. No, it wasn't like that. So, but it was a cool experience looking back now to make that kind of dramatic entrance. And that's one thing that I think our company has always done well on is when they want to feature something and make it special, they find a way to do it.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
All right, I had one last question. We are in Grit Week, so we're sponsored by Body Armor. Go to Body Armor, drinkbodyarmor.com. Strawberry Banana is my favorite. You can find them on Amazon as well. Floyd Mayweather punched you in the nose. He doesn't punch that hard, does he?
Well, he didn't punch me that hard because he was being nice. You know, we did that angle, and I told Floyd before we did it that he needed to break my nose to get this thing going. I said, don't put it through the back of my head, but if you don't bust my nose, we're not going to get anywhere with this angle.
Right.
We got to get it going. And I had spent a year boxing and stuff like that. So, you know, I was kind of getting used, believe it or not, it sounds weird, but getting punched in the face every day. So it wasn't, to me at the time, it didn't seem like that big a deal. And when you look back at that video and see how Mayweather did it, he threw these very solid punches in. I didn't want him to hit me hard and break his hand either. You got to figure we had a $500 million fighter that we have doing this angle. So we have to take care of him, you know, like a Fabergé egg. And the hardest part with Floyd was is trying to talk him out of doing crazy stuff because he's such a big fan and his enthusiasm. And, you know, he wanted me to chop him and wanted me to stand on him. But when he threw those punches, they were so fast – I only counted half of them. You know, I thought he hit me like 3 or 4 times. I think he hit me like 7 or 8. And then the last one was a little left hook. It just went right across my nose and tipped the end of it. And didn't even really mess up my nose, but he made it bleed and did a great job. He's such a pro. I can't explain how much fun I had working with him. And that angle is one of the biggest promotions I've ever done. But he understands, just like, you know, Muhammad Ali and all those great guys that understood that fight promotion and that trash talking and that gameplay. He understands that and was so much fun to work with. And other than that, he was a pretty chill dude. He really was. You get him away from the cameras and all that other stuff. He's a very, very chill professional. I enjoyed working with him.
I love that. I love that your idea of a great time was getting punched in the face 7 times and having your nose broken. That's awesome.
Come on, man.
All right, so
don't worry, I'm not going to write an award-winning novel anytime soon. I got to work with what I got.
Yes. Well, this has been awesome, man. We really appreciate it. Everyone check out the Big Show's show on Netflix. Also,
yes, sir.
Shout out to you because I think, you know, wrestling, your entire career, your family, Netflix show, everything you've done, I think still the pinnacle is you had a cameo in Cisco's Thong Song, which that should be like, that's first ballot Hall of Fame because that's a first ballot Hall of Fame song. Like that's a cultural song that you see it and you're like, I know exactly where I was when I first heard that song. I can't believe all of America loved this song.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe what I got paid to do that. It's ridiculous.
There you go.
That was a very cool experience. And thank you to Cisco for putting me in the Thong Song. I'm a part of music culture now. So
yes.
There you go.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thanks so much, Paul. We really appreciate it, man. Be well.
Appreciate you guys. Be safe. Thank you for having
me. Thanks, man.
Take care.
Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started. Okay, let's finish up the show, which people who are watching this live right now, they're going to be like, holy fuck, they just time traveled. Yeah, we did. So it's 9:30 right now.
You can say that you saw this live. Tell your kids. It's like seeing Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock.
Shout out to everyone who watched the Grit stream. It was awesome.
Got some acid in my headband.
We're so fucked mentally right now. And we're going to finish the show, a great show, a great week, with the first ever SpongeBob table reading done by Pardon My Take with special guest Nick. Not KB, Nick.
Important
some
distinction.
Confusion
there.
Sometimes. Yes. People are like, hey, is that that KB guy? It's like, no, it's Nick. So, what is the name of this episode?
This is the pizzeria episode.
The pizza delivery episode.
Now, just point of order here. Are we doing the voices of the actual characters, or are we just going freeform?
What is SpongeBob's voice?
Bah!
What the fuck is that?
I gotta do the laughing. Bah!
Shit, that was funny, Billy.
What's Squidward?
Hurry up with those chairs, SpongeBob.
Okay. Billy's actually really good at all these.
Elmo.
Bah! I can't
bah!
Do
it.
Okay. And then what about... okay, I'm going to do mine straight. I don't know if I can do a voice. Give me a voice I could do for SpongeBob.
Tony Montana.
Oh, yeah, I could. Who's the bad guy? All right, let's do it.
What about Mr. Krabs? What's that voice?
I hear you.
Okay. All right. I'll give it a shot.
All right. So it's the pizzeria episode. Squidward is played by
me,
Hank. Mr. Krabs is played by PFT. I'm SpongeBob. Lyle, the fish, played by Nick.
My favorite SpongeBob character too.
Yep. And other parts.
Oh wait, PFT, you play Squidward.
I'm Krabs.
There's only like two lines for Krabs.
Okay, I'm Squidward.
All right, so PFT is Squidward. Good check there, Hank. And Hank will be Mr. Krabs. All right, let's do it. So PFT is Squidward.
Mm-hmm.
And scene.
Who's narrator?
Do a narrator voice and then a Squidward voice.
Nick, can you narrate?
Sure.
All right, Nick will narrate.
The scene starts at the Krusty Krab with SpongeBob cleaning a table.
Hurry up with those chairs, SpongeBob. It's after closing and I'd like to go home.
Phone rings.
I got it. Coming.
Leaps for phone, but Squidward answers first. SpongeBob falls to the floor and exclaims,
Hello? Sorry, sir. We're close.
Mr. Krabs snatches phone.
Ahoy there, Krusty Krab. How can I help you?
Customer explains order over phone.
Pizza?
Eyes turn into dollar signs.
Of course we have pizza.
Mr. Krabs.
That was Patrick Mahomes as Squidward.
Hank? Hank's texting while he's...
I see that. I was texting something to PFT.
Our delivery squad will bring her right over.
Hangs up.
Mr. Krabs, we don't serve pizza.
Mr. Krabs gets a plate of Krabby Patties and turns it into a pizza. Then he puts it in a box.
We don't deliver.
We don't deliver.
Gives Squidward the pizza.
But you do.
What the fuck? Can't you just get SpongeBob to do it?
Great idea. Take him with you.
SpongeBob sneaks over, smiling big.
That's not what I had in mind.
Front end check. Antenna.
Touches the boat antenna, making it vibrate.
Check. Bumper. Check. Bumper sticker.
Bumper sticker says, I brake for sea urchins.
Check.
Uncaps the tire pressure and puts his mouth on it, causing him to inflate like a balloon and talk in a squeaky, high-pitched voice while he is now the size of a giant parade balloon.
Tire pressure!
Blows out the rest of the pressure in Squidward's face, returning him to his normal size and voice.
Check. Vehicle inspection complete. We're really making history here, Squidward. That lucky customer is going to get the first Krabby Patty pizza ever.
Good. Then you drive.
Tosses his hat away.
I can't. I'm still in boating school.
Come on, SpongeBob. It's just around the corner.
This is so bad. Well, yeah, but...
Just do what you do in school.
Well, okay. Wait. Don't tell me.
Back it up.
Huh?
Back it up.
Right back it up?
Turns to move the shift out.
Back it up.
Okay.
Shift it into reverse, SpongeBob.
Reverse? Oh, yeah, reverse.
SpongeBob imagines the words forward and backward turning into Korean characters.
Back it up.
Shifts gears.
Backing up.
Backs up really fast.
What is going on?
Give me the wheel, SpongeBob. Give me the wheel.
Oh, fuck. This is so bad. Backing up! Backing up! Backing up!
They go over a bumpy area with rocks, and then they spin around and around and around, screaming. The next morning, the boat goes over five hills.
Backing up! Backing up! Backing up!
Boat stops with no fuel left.
Backing up!
Well, you backed up, and you know what? I think we're out of gas. And you know what else? We're in the middle of nowhere!
And you know what else? I think the pizza's getting cold!
And the pizza's cold? Oh, the pizza's cold, not the pizza! Oh, how could it get any worse?
Oh, time out. I think it might get worse.
Kicks boat, and the boat's gasoline becomes full again, and it drives away in the distance without them.
Well, we can still deliver that foot!
Squidward narrows his eyes. Later, both walk on the sand.
Ow! Ow! Ow!
Singing.
The Krusty Krab pizza is the pizza for you and me. The Krusty Krab pizza is the pizza. By the way, people are saying I have a terrible SpongeBob impression. I don't even know what he fucking sounds like. Yeah. I've never seen an episode of my life.
Give me another Squidward line real quick.
And my feet are killing me.
You guys have to switch. You have to like go towards what Big Cat's
so
going.
I'm going high.
Yeah, you need okay. that. You need a nasally.
Gotcha. Okay. Nasally all right. All right. I'm resetting my Squidward. I was adrift for a while
like
there.
Nasally.
How do that again? Do that again, Billy. Billy.
SpongeBob.
Okay.
And my feet are killing me.
Whoa.
Trips over SpongeBob, who is lying on the ground.
It's an old pioneer trick.
SpongeBob, what are you doing?
I saw it in a movie once. Shh. It's working.
SpongeBob, this is no time for...
It's working!
What is it?
Try! 16 wheels! Now I can show you how the pioneers hitchhiked!
Starts dancing in the road while wearing a hat.
Whee!
Squidward sits on a rock while playing with a wooden spoon.
Crashing, flashing, breakdancers!
Honks his truck.
He's stopping! He's stopping!
Squidward realizes he's not stopping and grabs SpongeBob out of the way. Where they are covered in sand thanks to the truck. Squidward narrows his eyes at the smiling SpongeBob.
Wait, time out. Is there an actual song? The song?
The Krusty Krab pizza is the pizza for you and me.
You're so fucking pissed at me that I messed it up. I don't know what it is.
Is the pizza for
I like your version
me.
Better, actually.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, just freestyle, Big
shanty.
Cat.
Yeah. All right. What am I doing? Where are we? Oh, the Krusty Krab pizza is the pizza for you and me. The Krusty Krab pizza.
The wind blows on Squidward's nose, making it touch his face, so he puts it down, only for it to touch his face again, so he puts it in his mouth.
Is the pizza free delivery? The Krusty Krab pizza is the pizza very tasty?
SpongeBob gets carried around in the air by the huge winds.
Will you let go of that stupid pizza already?
Still being carried around in the air.
I can't. It's for the customer.
Who cares about the customer?
I do.
Well, I don't.
Wind stops and SpongeBob gasps.
Squidward!
Starts flying again.
Let go of that pizza!
No!
Runs over Squidward.
Ow!
Holding SpongeBob's legs.
SpongeBob, let go of that pizza!
Now it's for the customer.
SpongeBob, let go of the pizza!
Now! Dude, I don't know what we're doing. I did say that I thought it was going to get worse, and it has gotten worse from that moment.
Hang on to the pizza!
Tornado spits them both out. SpongeBob uses the pizza as a parachute, but Squidward falls hard onto the ground.
Hey!
Crawls up to the screen.
Where's the road?
A tumbleweed rolls by.
We're doomed! How are we going to get home? Which way do we go?
SpongeBob lands.
What are we gonna do now? There's no road here.
I think the town's this way.
Oh, don't tell me. Jethro, the pioneers?
That's right.
Points to a mossy rock.
Moss always points to civilization.
That way? That way there?
SpongeBob nods.
So let me get this straight. You think we should go that way?
Yep.
Well then, I'm going this way.
Huh? Squid, wait. I don't think.
Trust me, I know where I'm going.
Pans out to show another city in the other direction.
The Krusty Krab pizza is the pizza absolutely pizza.
Later, SpongeBob is walking backwards.
I want to note that the script said starts beatboxing, so that's what Big Cat was doing right there.
Pizza!
There it is. Later, SpongeBob is walking backwards. SpongeBob pants almost split in two and move up and down simultaneously as he continues to beatbox. Still, later.
Krusty Krab pizza is the pizza, yeah, for you and me. Crab pizza for you. Crust, the crushy, and the crab, and the pizza inside.
Later, they are both lying face down in the sand.
Sponge, we gotta eat something.
I heard in times of hardship, the pioneers would eat coral.
Squidward eats some coral.
No, maybe it wasn't coral.
Squidward spits out the coral.
Maybe it was sand. No, mud.
Give me the pizza.
Wait, I remember now. It was coral.
Give it to me.
No, we promised it's for the customer.
Fancy music plays.
You're right. It's for the customer.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we better check on it. Make sure it's okay.
Well,
just a peek.
Opens box. He shuts it quickly.
Okay, it's fine.
No, I think I saw something.
Opens box.
Oh, no, I was wrong. It looks okay. Sure is a fine-looking pizza.
Yeah.
What's that? Is that the cheese?
Yeah.
And the pepperoni?
Yeah.
SpongeBob slurps.
Oh, it looks good, huh?
Snaps out of it.
Wait a second. I know what you're trying to do, Squidward.
Closes box.
I'm not letting you eat the pizza.
Give me the pizza.
No.
Don't make me take it away from you, SpongeBob.
Get away.
Chases SpongeBob.
Get back here, SpongeBob. Give me the pizza.
No.
SpongeBob.
No.
SpongeBob.
No.
Wait.
No. No.
Runs into Squidward.
I want that pizza, and you're going to hand it over one way or another.
Look, we're saved.
Sure, we're saved. Now give me some pizza.
No, really, Squid. We're saved. We're saved. We're saved.
He jumps in and out of his pants.
Will you cut that out?
To a conga beat.
Save.
Rips himself apart, then two parts go in circles, and then they connect again. SpongeBob starts doing a conga dance.
Save. We are saved.
That's just a stupid boulder.
It's not just a boulder. It's a rock. A rock. It's a big, beautiful old rock.
Climbs up it and rubs it.
Oh, the pioneers used to ride these babies for miles, and it's in great shape.
SpongeBob, will you forget the stupid pioneers? Have you ever noticed that there are none of them left? That's because they were lousy hitchhikers, ate coral, and took directions from algae. And now, you're telling me that they thought they could drive?
SpongeBob runs over Squidward with the boulder.
Rocks? Hold on there, Jethro.
They stop outside the customer's house.
I can't wait to see the look on our customer's face.
Tring. Lyle is from Liverpool, England.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah? I can't do that.
Congratulations, sir. Your Krabby Pizza is here.
I can't do a Liverpool
accent. Yeah, you got it. Well, thanks, bro.
Wow, thanks. I've been dying for one of the... I can't do accents.
Oh, my God. Well, thanks, bro. I've been dying for one of these. I can't wait to see the look on our customer's face.
Yeah. Ding dong.
Congratulations, sir. Your Krabby Patty pizza's here.
Wow, thanks. I've been dying for one of these. Where's my drink?
What drink?
My drink. My Diet Dr. Kelp. Don't tell me you forgot my drink.
But you didn't order any.
How am I supposed to eat this pizza without my drink?
Tears start rolling down his face.
Didn't you ever think of the customer?
Throws the pizza at SpongeBob's face.
You call yourself a delivery boy? Well, I ain't buying.
Slams the door. SpongeBob goes over to Squidward, smiling and trying not to cry.
Sponge! It's okay! Sponge!
SpongeBob drops the pizza, falls over, starts sobbing, and absorbs his tears over and over.
Sponge!
Squidward gets angry, grabs the pizza, stomps towards the customer's house, and pounds on the door.
Another one? Look, I told your little friend I ain't paying for that.
You Scottish now?
Yeah, I switched it up.
Okay, cool.
Well, this one's on the house.
Slams the pizza box in the orange fish's face.
did he change his mind?
He sure did. Ate the whole thing in one bite.
No drink?
Nah. Now take me home.
Jumps on the rock.
Are you kidding? We have just enough time to make it back to work.
Backs up the rock where they are instantly at the Krusty Krab.
Work!
Screen cuts to black.
Oh, my aching tentacles.
You guys,
wow. Wonderful.
Let's run it back.
You want to do it again? Let's do it, but let's do it backwards.
Oh, fuck. What a experience that was. I got to watch some SpongeBob to try to figure out his voice.
You know what? After reading through that, I can see what Jim Harbaugh loves about him.
Yes. Simple. He's a hard worker.
He's enthusiastic.
Yes. All right. That is our show. We will see everyone on Monday. We have a great, great interview with a longtime AWL fan favorite recurring guest, CJ McCollum from The Bubble. So we'll see you then.
Love you guys.
Billy, do your monologue.
Well, I've been up for about 28 hours now. I got up at 6:30 on Wednesday morning. It is now Thursday at 9:48. Through this time, I pushed myself to my physical and mental limitations. I ran 26.2 miles in under 8 hours with breaks. My gooch is extremely chafed. My eyes keep twitching. I don't know what is happening, and I think I can start to see sounds. Love you guys.